Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I remember being in the ring in 2009 interviewing Bernard Dunne after he had beaten Ricardo Cordoba. He was ecstatic and exhausted in equal measure, but he still managed to come out with a zinger of a line along the lines of, "What a day! Ireland are Grand Slam champions, the Manx were beaten, and I'm world champion." Now, I wasn't the only one thinking Saturday just gone was shaping up to be something similar, but in the end, Leinster did not become European champions. Katy Taylor failed to become a 2-8 undisputed world champion. And the Manx weren't beaten. Neither of them. One of them crowned Premier League champions. And the other one basically qualified for the Champions League. Welcome to Monday Second Captains Podcast. Hey, Si. Hey,
Owen. How are you?
Busy one today.
Very, very brave of you to show up on.
We'll
today.
Be talking football in our second podcast today. But that was... It was not the dream Saturday of Irish sport we were hoping for. And in fairness, unless you're a Roanoke Irish super fan, which I have to admit I'm fast becoming. But in terms of Leinster winning and Katie and all that...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose fizzled. I was looking at it just purely through the Leinster lens there. I mean, maybe if you're a Munster fan, you know, the Katy thing, sure, that put a bit of a dampener on what was otherwise a truly brilliant day. So, you know, we shouldn't just, I suppose, presume that everyone was pulling hard for the boys in blue on Saturday evening. That may be wide of the mark. And that's just the rugby fans who aren't Leinster rugby fans.
You can't say, in fairness, that you weren't warned that Katy was in for a tough fight, by the way. Our World Service members heard Gavin Casey on Friday predict a Chantal Cameron victory. He went for 96-94, the exact margin of victory of the two judges' scorecards. Wow. So doesn't get much more accurate than
that's the standard we should be holding all of our analysts. That's the standard we've hit now on. We have to just progress with that for the rest of our podcasting careers. All of our analysts have to precisely predict not just results, but also the exact scoreline of said results.
Yeah.
Shane Horgan predicted La Rochelle.
He did.
Exact scoreline?
No. The exact scoreline. Now, and to be fair, he was hesitant. I mean, I think he did say, if you're asking me for a prediction, I'm going to say Leinster, but I don't believe that for a second. I think that was basically the upshot of what he said on the show last week.
Gavin, back on the show tomorrow to talk about the Katy Cameron fight and what's next for Katy Taylor. Munster could end up the one Irish province with silverware this season. We'll be chatting about their Pro 14 final during the week. The Munster Hurling Championship is on a knife edge now after a couple of thrillers yesterday. All that for... You're looking at me, Murph. What are you...
Just how thrilling it was. Just a lot of fun, Owen. I know you don't want me to talk about it. We just don't have the time. But I mean...
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got... That'll do for now, but I've got an email that I'll get to later on in the show.
Okay, excellent.
On the hurling. And that's all for members during the week. Fiver a month plus VAT. Secondcaptains.com. As for the Champions Cup final, this feels like two separate but very intertwined stories, right? Leinster blowing it again when it really matters.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronan O'Gara, their old nemesis, ascending to an even higher plane within Irish sport. He dominated this event from start to finish, right from the first moments of the RTE broadcast, when the camera pans to the panel pitch side, and who's in the middle of them? Oh, it's the La Rochelle head coach, in relaxed form, to say the least.
That was the one thing I said, if I want to go coaching, I can't be like I was as a player, you know. It was torture before games. We put so much pressure on us, and I think when you're the kicker then, you think that the whole world is watching you when, you know... Then after the 2007 World Cup, I went to the States and the taxi driver was there. You're back from where? The World Cup. And he was like, what's that, man? And I was like, okay, this guy didn't fucking see me being a loser, kicking the ball left to right, you know, so...
I was on holidays in Marbella. They were like, that 10 that you had, he was all over the shop.
Oh, wow. All right, I'm gone. Good luck.
Okay, Nolan, thanks so much. Best of luck today. God. Thanks a million.
just to bear in mind, that is right before our Heineken Cup final.
Jerry Flannery. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Amazing. And this is a guy who, when he was a player, as he alludes to himself, would put himself through torture. It's supposed to be harder as a coach or a manager. You always hear him saying, oh, I have to look after 30 people now, not just one person. It's much more all-encompassing. And yet, O'Gara seems to have cracked the code and made himself somehow a much more relaxed coach than he was as a player. Which is
and amazing. He said when he went to Canterbury Crusaders, you know, where he's learnt a lot of his lessons, that he was sort of surprised how the players and the coaches sort of laugh on match day and in the build-up and just play music and kind of live their normal life, and that you didn't have to act in this sort of somber, obsessive way in the build-up. And that was the way it was with Munster and Ireland for a lot of Roger's career. So he learned it. But it's one thing kind of watching another setup do it and do it differently. It's another to actually, A, get your players to think that way, but B, actually really believe it deep in your bones and actually be relaxed. Like, you can't fake how relaxed he was on that RT pre-match.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's advantageous to project that image, but you also, if you're not in the mind frame to do it, then you're not going to be able to do it. He was also in great form on TV after the match, getting soaked by his players, going on about winning 6 Champions Cups, building a team that's going to do that. And then into the press conference, it suddenly seems to occur to him that he needs to use this opportunity to twist the knife into Leinster a little bit by bringing up various signs of disrespect shown towards his team, including, but not limited to, James Ryan failing to make eye contact with his rival Gregory Aldrich during the coin toss. Normally you engage eyes and no eyes were engaged, says O'Gara. Ken, Greg was disappointed and let down.
I don't understand why.
Because were meeting captain to captain and he did not engage. Eyes were usually engaged and on this occasion eyes were not engaged.
According to Gregory Aldrich.
Or maybe too much.
Captain. Or maybe, there was a different translation at one point. Apparently.
Either way, the eyes were engaged.
There's a Goldilocks eye engagement.
Yeah. They weren't given a big enough room for the post-match function at the stadium.
This is La Rochelle.
I think we're in Land's End Rugby Club. We couldn't get a room in this place, he says.
Well, why do they have a function at the stadium after the game?
Some sort of friends and family job,
apparently so.
Why have it in the stadium? It's the worst place to have it.
Later again, he told off the ball, there's a small percentage of Leinster fans I wouldn't have much time for that made themselves known in the approach, which I think sparked up our boys for the battle. Leinster fans getting pissed and O'Gara go, we'll show them. Amazing.
What kind of stuff were they doing?
I don't know if he went into any more detail than that, but that's, we can kind of imagine, you know. There were a few very loud renditions of the famous Leinster terrace chant again, which goes a bit
welcome
like this.
To the jungle.
Leinster. That was enough to piss O'Gara off. So listen, he's crawled back into Leinster heads at this stage. He's reignited the entire rivalry with the helping hand from Munster beating Leinster last week. It's all of a piece, though. Leinster are getting spooked by Munster and Rog once again. And they blew it, Si. Leinster blew it.
Yeah, like from 17-0 up at home, your plan is going perfectly. So in the players' heads, like, we had this plan. We've been thinking about this for 12 months. Specifically designed for this team, and 3 times in a row, including like that James Lowe kick to the corner, everything going right for you. La Rochelle looked kind of, you wouldn't say rattled, but like getting knocked behind the gain line, the likes of Will Skelton being lassoed around the ankles, everything working. So from that point on, A, for Leinster to lose belief and La Rochelle to slowly gain belief took quite a bit on both sides. Leinster, all that scar tissue came up again, kind of didn't learn any of their lessons. For La Rochelle to believe at that point, I think pretty much every other team in Europe would have lost belief.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing wasn't so much tactically, because I don't think La Rochelle did anything amazing tactically. We're talking Rog up here, but like it was essentially sort of power and territory and just keep grinding away. They didn't actually pull off any amazing offload or moment where you go, wow, that's special. Maybe the Dante bump off on Ringrose for that try. That's just power, you know, and Will Skelton's power over and over. Did a couple of poaches, but not an exceptional amount. But it was just more them getting scoreboard pressure on Leinster. And as Rog said, before and after the game, particularly after to BT, we know these guys can be rattled. He didn't say it in explicitly those terms, but they haven't won it in a good while now. And if we have scoreboard pressure and play our territory game, they're going to struggle. And that was it. Like, Leinster, tactically, I mean, they they shanked so many kicks, but tactically they didn't get all that much wrong. They got it mentally and psychologically wrong, but that wasn't from the start. They were calm at the start.
That's the incredible thing. Yeah. Talk about embracing the occasion for the first 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it all starts falling apart.
And
that's
you're not talking about a bunch of players who haven't won anything.
Yeah.
They've all won everything there is to win over the last 12 months. They're not flakes. Now, as a group, Leinster are starting to head that way, you'd have to say. But this group of players have won more than most other players in Europe. So, and quite recently. So that turnaround, that sort of turnaround in psychology was the most epic thing about an epic game. A brilliant game of rugby.
Ken and I did just exchange a glance there, Simon, when you said that Leinster aren't flakes. I mean, we're not saying that Leinster are flakes, but at the same time, it is two seasons in a row.
The proof of the pudding is in the flaking.
This is an extremely flaky pudding.
Well, this is the thing. I wonder, will we look back on this as that was the start of La Rochelle becoming, you know, the Canterbury Crusaders of Europe and winning 5 in 6 years and going on to win the double in France as well. As opposed to, we think this is all about Leinster. Maybe we're actually just watching a really brilliant team. There's no doubt there's mental frailty in Leinster as well. But very few teams could have picked away at that at 17-0 away from home in the final.
Yeah, Smurf.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they can now become flaky, Leinster.
Okay,
because you do this enough years in a row.
Yeah.
Like, say Mayo won one way back in the 90s against Meath or something.
Yeah, yeah.
This might never have happened. Mayo may have gone and won a couple more.
Yeah.
But if you do a couple in a row against a good team, you then self-sabotage.
In fact, it's not just La Rochelle, to be honest.
Yeah.
They've lost other teams in semi-finals as well. So it's been a consistent
I'm just saying, if I was constructing an argument to say that Leinster aren't flakes, Mayo aren't the team that I'd be going to rhetorically. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be reaching for Mayo at this juncture. Now,
no, what I'm saying is they are becoming.
But I will tell you this, though. I mean, I was actually at Galway Tyrone on Saturday, so I was being informed via text message of what was going on in the Leinster game. And I mean, suffice to say, my thoughts as, you know, so I'm watching one sporting event, but hearing about another one, which is never a great way to be taking in this information. But I was like, oh my God, this is literally the biggest bottle job I've ever heard in my entire life. I actually sat down to watch the game yesterday. It wasn't as bad as it sounded to me via text message, for sure, in that you go 17-0 up at the start of a Heineken Cup final. You score 3 tries inside the first 11 minutes, and you somehow contrive to lose. I think it is true that La Rochelle are much better than I think the floating Irish sports fan gives them credit for, because they don't have, you know, the 5 or 6 starters for the French team that Toulouse have. You know what I mean? It's easier for us to understand who these people are, but at the same time, it's hugely damaging. It is hugely damaging. And I posed a question last week and you kind of laughed at me about the World Cup, right?
Yeah.
But this is a lot of the Irish team given a chance to, like, at the, and I mean, Grand Slams are huge. They're absolutely huge. But there is a subset of the Irish sporting audience that won't take Irish rugby seriously until they win a World Cup quarterfinal. Mm. And to lose a game like this in your home stadium against a French team in circumstances that are, you know, kind of nearly bizarre, you know, to score 3 tries in 11 minutes, in the first 11 minutes, and not win the game, I think that is definitely baggage that Ireland will be carrying into the World Cup. Like, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Like, it has to. It absolutely has to.
Yeah.
Like, we referenced it a couple of weeks ago, I think, talking about all the Leinster players, all unbidded, talking about the Champions Cup final last year for, like, 6 months afterwards.
Yep.
They were obviously massively scared by it. I mean, that was Teddy Bear's picnic stuff compared to Saturday.
They are different they're different teams with the different coaches and different environments and a few differences there.
Yeah.
And Ireland have proved that they can do it very recently.
Yeah.
So,
I think the big thing is there are Johnny specifics. Sexton.
Well, yeah,
like, you know
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if Ireland have Sexton, then I think it's a different deal.
And
but I also
Shane's
think Ty Byrne and O'Mahony are significant.
Shane's going to be talking a little bit about Ross Byrne here. So there are definite specifics where you would say if Ross Byrne is in that situation, if he's still the second choice at half at a World Cup, does he have to grab it by the scruff of the neck more than he did? Which is something that we're going to get into.
Yeah, I just think that Leinster have been thinking about this for 12 months, this team, this coach for 12 months, and that actually was a negative for them ultimately, because their whole season was like, we'll get the big lead in the URC, then send our second team to South Africa for those final few games of the season, same as they did the previous year. They will then rest our team in the semi-final against Munster. We'll all be prepped and zoned in for this final. We have a very specific game plan for La Rochelle. And everything was actually right up to, you know, the 70-0 and even kind of up to half-hour mark because they got a couple more penalties and a good lead. But as soon as there was that there was any flaw that they saw, oh God, the plan we've been given isn't working, then it all fell apart. There's no doubt they were...
But I mean, showing mental frailty at 70-0 up is a pretty bad... That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you're 70-0 up.
Yeah.
And you start doubting the plan.
I don't think there's any doubt that they were mentally shaky in that second half. You can't make that many errors and put it down to just coincidence.
Let's hear from Shane and Rory.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The chicken. Make me a scapegoat, if you will. Call me a traitor, if you will.
Can you believe that? Can you believe the Brits?
Please, let's save the country.
They say Rory McIlroy is a Brit. You know.
If the price of freedom, the price of peace, is the blackening of my name.
The chicken.
Gladly pay it.
Well, we certainly have plenty to talk about in our rugby slot today. Shane, dare I ask, how's the form?
It's not great, lads. I don't like you. It's not great. It's been like... it was devastating on Saturday. As devastated as I've... Well, certainly since I've retired. I've never felt quite like that. And it did bring back the most painful memories of my career as well, which included... exiting the World Cup in 2007, and the one that actually came to mind most as I was sitting with my head in my hands was the semi-final against Munster in 2006. And I think there's a few parallels, actually, not necessarily with, you know, the type of game or even the type of performance, but with the kind of predicament that Leinster might be in now.
Okay, well, we'll get into all that. And there's one obvious common thread between that Munster team and the current La Rochelle team in terms of
I'm quite aware of that as well. Don't worry, that guy.
That guy's getting a mention, all right.
He was there in 07 as well.
Yeah.
And as much as, you know, and we'll go into it later on, and I, you know, as devastated as I was, what he's doing and what he's done and what he'll continue to be is, you know, inspirational, I think. And if there was any... You know, any silver lining, and I found it very difficult to draw one from it. I think, you know, his success is something that, you know, everyone can be proud of.
The other voice you're hearing is that of Rory O'Connor, who wrote in The Independent, "Leinster started like a train, but then pulled into the station to wait for the fifth star to arrive." Rory, what happened?
It reminded me a lot of the Ireland-Wales Six Nations game, where Ireland scored heavily in the first 20 minutes and looked like they had the game in the bag. I can't remember exactly what the score was after 15, 20 minutes, but it was an incredible start. And in the stadium, Wales were completely dominant for the next half an hour, 40 minutes, and Ireland just pulled up. But Wales weren't good enough to score. And then Ireland brought Ross Byrne on, and they closed the game out. They made the changes, and Wales ran out of steam. But against La Rochelle and the quality that they have... Leinster threw their flurry of punches. Sorry, maybe it's the fight the weekend. I've got a lot of boxing analogies. Threw their opening flurry. And it's hard. Like rugby, you know, Man City go three up after 20 minutes. They can sit on the ball. They just keep the ball. The opposition can't get near them. You can't do that really in rugby. You have to keep playing. And through a couple of things, largely the quality of La Rochelle, it's not just on Leinster. We got to recognise that. They are an unbelievable team. I think if they were at the World Cup, they would have a very good chance of winning it. They're right on... you know, are they better than anything Ireland came across in the Six Nations? They quite possibly are. You know, they're certainly in that conversation, considering that O'Gara has and his team there have drawn together so many world-class superstars from across the world and put them into this 23-man squad. But Leinster have got to own what they can do in their own control. And they got more and more frazzled as the game got on. They're definitely in their heads. They're definitely, I think, this fifth-star narrative that they have, putting everything on winning this trophy again, even resting the entire squad for 2 weeks beforehand. As the game got on and as the prize got closer, they started to make bad decisions under enormous pressure. But it wasn't just the La Rochelle pressure, it was the pressure of what was on the line for them. And there's a couple of examples of that that we can go into later. But La Rochelle won it. They were the better team across 80 minutes. Leinster were the better team for 12, 20 minutes. They were unbelievable. It was an incredible start. But you can't just rely on that against this levels of team. And maybe against other oppositions across the season, you can throw that flurry and then just sit back. But you just can't do that at this level of competition.
What are the parallels with 2006, Shane, that you mentioned before? I let that one go.
Just one quick thing on that. We did say before the game that, you know, the pressure that comes with getting that fifth star could do two things. It can either inspire or it can intimidate. And I think it did the latter it did both. We saw one of the best starts and some of the best play that we've seen, you know, in any Highland Cup final and from any Leinster team. And then you could feel the anxiety, you could see it on their faces even going in at half time. The way La Rochelle went in after that try and the way Leinster went in, there was a complete change in body language. And then when they came out for the second half, they were riddled with anxiety for almost the entire second half. And you could see what was happening. They were thinking, we had made the perfect start. We had it all. We had the star on our shirt and it's going bad here. And as it unfolded, there was an inevitability about it. You know, and some of the play, it would not being able to get out of their 22 or in the half or halfway, not being able to retain possession. You know, a series of really bad kicks. It looked as if they were impinged by anxiety.
How can a team at that level, who have been in and around the biggest games, have been involved in them, Shane, be, in your words, riddled with anxiety when they're still coming out with a half decent lead in the second half?
Well, because they're human beings, you know, and sometimes the mind wanders. And you know, I think anybody who's played rugby or played sport can know that feeling where, especially when things have gone so well at the start, and there's an adrenaline that goes with that. And that's the other thing that I thought that it was clear. The way Leinster were pumped up for that, you know, for the opening period, their rucking, their body height was so good. Their accuracy at the breakdown was phenomenal. You know, every pre-planned move that they did worked. They just looked phenomenal. But as you know, La Rochelle came back into it with those tries in the first half. That kind of, you know, they were very distinctly different from what Leinster had done. But you know, nonetheless, they were the points on the scoreboard. And as that started to build up, of course, your mind wanders. We've given these guys our best. It's like in a boxing match. We've given this guy the best. We've hit the massive shots and he's still standing. What's going on? And then instead of thinking about what you're doing, you're reflecting on what's happening. And I think that was clear. The other thing that I really noticed was Leinster were out on their feet very early in that second half. I remember Ringrose was going around telling people to stand up to breathe. Because I think that was, you know, maybe two things. I don't think it's a conditioning thing. I think they just left so much out there in the first half and they had so much adrenaline, how pumped up they were. Every time they scored one of those, you know, brilliant tries, you know, the level of adrenaline that must rush through the body, that for me looked as if they were depleted in energy in the second half. And of course, the exact opposite was the case for La Rochelle. Having gone through that horrific period at the start of the game, and you think, you know, maybe you think you're out of them. They certainly didn't, but, you know, one would. As they stayed back in the game, they got back into it, they got into the change room at halftime. Can you imagine O'Gara in the change room at halftime? How positive he was about what got on. You know?
I'm not sure he was in there. I think he was in the referee's room, or he was trying to get in the referee's room.
Okay, we'll go on to that. Yeah, that might be something else.
Oh, no, absolutely. The 2016 shape, why did it remind you of that, of possibly your lowest ebb in club rugby?
Because nothing else matters, and I hate to say this, it's maybe not good for the listenership of this podcast, but nothing else matters for Leinster in terms of the next year of games until and if they do get into a final again and get into the European Cup final, because they could win every game by 25 points and we can say how brilliantly they're doing and how great their players are and their system is great, and none of it matters because every conversation we will have will be caveated on, well, what about the last 2 weeks of the season? Because that's all that matters. And until they get into a position, and Rory's really right about the fifth star, everybody's obsessed with it. And that almost makes everything else redundant. So until they get into a position again to challenge for the European Cup, and maybe it has to be against La Rochelle to really shake it off their back, until that happens, the rest of the season is, I'm sorry to say, pretty meaningless, unless they absolutely fall off a cliff in terms of performance, and then that's a different conversation. I don't expect that to happen. But in terms of how good they are during the year, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because everything now is on winning the next opportunity they get in the final.
Shane, just on Leinster and that ability to shrink in the second half, almost physically, but certainly tactically, psychologically, the biggest surprise for me was that they didn't learn from last season. And it's one thing to be in that situation against that team with that coach in one final, to have the lead, to have that inevitable sense that they're coming at you, their power, their territorial dominance. And then the exact same thing to happen in the second final, or two finals in a row. And then also to get this out of nowhere lifeline, this time from the Dante high tackle on Dyrus, and again to respond badly. I what did you think from that point on? So I thought Leinster were actually odds on to probably win it from that point, once they actually secured the line out from Van der Fleer. But what did you think of that end game from the point of the Dante high tackle and yellow card?
Well, they should have won it. They should have won it. And just to bring it back a little bit further to the start of your question, Simon, is, I think they did learn from last year. And if you the opening stanza, demonstrated that. Now, the idea that you're not going to, you may be forced into conceding tries because of the incredible power of La Rochelle, I'm afraid you're going to kind of have to maybe accept it. Now, it doesn't mean that you're any less aggressive or your ambition is not to allow them to score tries, but you know, that is likely to happen. And last year, they scored, La Rochelle scored 3-0. And that's ultimately why they won. Leinster went out with, the right mindset and was very sort of calculated, very obviously very clearly defined on a training park and on the whiteboard of how to break them down, and did that. And that was all great in the first half. But in the second half, yes, fatigue was a factor. The anxiety came in. But those two contributed to them not playing. And that was the real issue here, is that they did not play in that second half. They could not get out. They couldn't get territory. They couldn't keep the ball. Ross Byrne started playing in the pocket. At no point do the Leinster coaching ticket say, that is how we should play, and that's where you should be standing. They want to correct me, but standing directly behind the ruck, 15 meters back, and kicking the ball when actually most of the team is in front of you at that point, and you have to kick the ball, you have to kick the ball 15 meters to even, to get it over to the opposition side. You know, that is just not a plan that anybody has. And that comes from, stress and being inhibited and just making very poor decisions because of anxiety, because of tiredness. So, that was, as I was watching that unfold, I was going, this is not good for Leinster. And then because of that, because we were informed by that, I was concerned about them being able to manufacture a score in those last few moments after Dante went off. What was really troubling was there didn't seem to have gone into a drop goal setup. And I would have thought that was, after La Rochelle scored, I would have thought in the huddle, that's what you say. Kick the ball, get it back. Let's get into the drop goal setup, get a drop goal. And I'm surprised if that hasn't been practiced and if it hasn't been prepared. And then why it wasn't implemented, I don't know. When it wasn't implemented, at the time, my memory came back to, again, 2003 World Cup final with England and Johnny Wilkinson. Everybody knew what they were doing because that was prepared beforehand and has been talked about so often that, you know, teams prepare in that way. Leinster didn't do it. They went to wide channels. They at no point was Ross Byrne dropping into the pocket. I thought maybe even they would have Frawley on to give two drop goal options. That wasn't done. But, you know, I thought Ross Byrne was too front of line and for that, having been in the pocket all the second half, then to go up and not take him, you know, not to offer that as an option in the 22 when Leinster were in a couple of really good chances for that.
Is that the outhouse decision, Shane? Would that always be the outhouse decision at that point?
Oh, yeah. Listen, outhouse, and, you know, 9 and 10 are talking about that, but the whole team should know about that.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get a drop goal would have won that game, I'm convinced of it, right? So when they got the ball, that should have been a call to go into the setup for drop goal. And you know, there may be, that would be a wrinkle on what you would normally do in trying to score a try in the opposition 22, because it's a different objective. But everyone should know about it. It should be, you know, a systematic type of play. And looked at how good Leinster were prepared before the game, and those set plays worked very well. That is what we would call a power play, and there should be the option. And 10 at no point went in the pocket to drop a goal. And I know that's harsh on Ross Byrne. I know it's harsh on him. But, you know, this is what it is. He's 27. He's the leader of the team when Sexton isn't there as a 10. These are the moments of your career that you have to take the responsibility on. And unfortunately, he didn't choose to do it.
David Murphy emailed in along these lines. Rory said, I'll never understand why they ran themselves out of a perfect drop goal position. And when they had the chance to get back into that position, they kept neglecting that option in favour of going for a completely unnecessary try.
Yeah, I wonder if it was just the amount of time left on the clock that it was.
They thought that maybe La Rochelle would have time to come back up and kick a penalty.
Yeah, like, if you watch NFL, they're always trying to score at the right time. And if you score too early, you give La Rochelle a chance. But it's funny, it all comes back to O'Gara, doesn't it? I was listening to Donegh O'Callaghan last week. He did a podcast with Sean O'Rourke, and he talked about the 09 Grand Slam game and how when under the post when Wales went in front, it was O'Gara who took charge of the team and said, right, you're going to win the kickoff back. You're going to hit this ruck. You're going to hit this ruck, and then I'm going to drop the goal. And from being on the floor thinking we've just blown it again, O'Callaghan said, now it's obviously, he's telling the story 14 years on, and there's probably a little bit of embellishment. He's like, but it was O'Gara that led them back from the front, and that is the 10's role. I think Ringrose was the captain on the pitch at the time. But Ross Byrne, if Ireland get to a World Cup quarterfinal or final, it's probably him going to be on the pitch at that moment. His 23-year-old rival did it a week ago at the same stadium against the same opposition at the same end. He took control. He got himself into position. There was still time for Leinster to get the ball back, but Jack Crowdy went, no, we got to do it now. I wonder if they were trying to force the penalty as well as, you know, score the try. A lot of people said to me after the game on Saturday that he should have gone for the kick when the penalty was awarded. I think that would have been a bad call. Even though Van der Fleer was throwing into the line-out, it was just on the edge of his range. I wouldn't criticise him for that. That was a bit of a shot to nothing, and it was enough time on the clock to go and score it. But I do think Shane's right that there's two moments that where I think Leinster's decision making really comes into it. If you go back to the La Rochelle try, they had three lineouts in a row, all led to Maul penalties. Each time they threw it to Will Skelton at the front, and the lineout forwards were all at the back of the scrum or of the line-out. So all of their options were at the back, and they never once adjusted and said, do you know what we're going to do? Because Will Skelton's hard to lift, and each of the lifts are really, they're not clean. He doesn't get far off the ground, but they just get it into him. If you put Ryan Baird in front of him, even if you don't lift him, he's got a chance of getting it. So maybe the first time, fair enough. The second time, maybe fair enough because you think they're going to do something different. I think the third time you adjust and you go up against Skelton and you try and stop it, because as soon as he comes down, he's so wide that you can't get around them, and their forwards are so powerful. And like, part of the reason they were so tired was because they were mauling all day and losing the mauls, and O'Gara had identified that. So you try and win it against them. So that was one element of them not adjusting to what was in front of them, and the second one was the drop goal plan, because your chances of scoring against that La Rochelle team on the line with their goal line defence, the size of men, the fact that they had more energy, are very slim. And I know they got close, but they turned it over on the line, and then when they went back, Alaratoa comes in high, gets himself sent off, and that's the game.
Yeah, and Rory, I agree entirely with you on both those points. And we again flagged before the game that La Rochelle are the best defenders of their goal line in any team. you know, certainly any club team in world rugby, they're phenomenal. That's what they do. It's very difficult to get over there. You pay phase after phase after phase, and you think you're going to score, you think you're going to score, and what happens? You get turned over. So, you know, in those last moments, that's what Leinster should have had in their mindset. And as I said, they should have set up for the drop goal, which, by the way, they were so close to the line, it was a chip. I was sitting next to Ian Madigan, and he was saying the same. He said, even if you miss, you'll get the ball back again. There was enough time for to get another chance and set again. So we were flabbergasted that that wasn't being set up. And then to your point, and I think everybody in the stadium with even a passing knowledge of rugby was saying the same thing about the line out. So Will Skelton, you could have slipped the Rizla paper underneath his boots. He was being lifted. But he was barely getting off the ground, and we didn't have anybody up there. And it was flabbergasting. And it wasn't like we were staying on the ground and our maul defence was excellent. We weren't. Our actually maul defence was we were losing big yardage. So, and as I was watching it, I was thinking, just in that position at that time in the game, and my mind went back to Paul O'Connell. And how many times do we see Paul O'Connell, both for Munster and for Leinster, throwing himself up, getting thrown up there when, you know, and stealing the line out, and everyone going, oh my God, you know, how amazing is that? And whatever you expected to be on the ground, that Leinster didn't have that thinking either, you know, coming down from upstairs or on the pitch. I'm really surprised at.
What about management errors then, Rory? I'm sure they weren't expecting the team to shank so many kicks. James Lowe, obviously, Gibson Park, Ross Byrne getting blocked down. I'm sure they wouldn't have told the players to go into their shell and hold on to what was a thin lead. I never felt the lead was all that significant, personally. I just felt like the inevitability of La Rochelle was the far bigger factor than the scoreboard. But just in terms of errors, I thought maybe like Jack Cohn probably should have stayed on and bring Baird on for one of the second rows. But what do you think overall, management, what errors do you think they made?
Well, personally, I would have started Baird because I think the...
Second row.
No, on the flank. I would have gone with... I think Doris... I know Jack Cohn is an excellent player, but I think Doris is probably the best number. Well, Aldrete's pretty good, and so is Ardie Savay, but he's one of the top three number eights in the world. And
sorry, we can't have Jack Cohn.
I know,
dropped.
I feel terrible.
Not on this podcast after the great chat we
dropped,
had.
Well, there's no such thing as a dropping anymore. You know, he's a finisher. But I do think that you take Doris out of eight, you lose something substantial. And he wasn't. He talked about not performing in last year's final. He didn't really perform in this year's final either. You take away something from your team. And also, Baird is one of your most physical options. He is an incredible athlete. He is, in my mind, potentially, his ceiling is so high, and he has had a really, really good season on the blind side flank for Leinster. He gives you another line out outlet. He gives you energy. And I know Conan played well. It's hard to, I'm not, you know,
really well.
He played really well in the first 20 minutes.
He's arguably in better form than
probably is than Doris, but Doris has been moved around an awful lot since the Six Nations. But yeah, maybe it was Doris who should have been coming off the bench. Like, there shouldn't be any sacred cows. I think he'd go back further. I think they made a mistake by resting so many players for the two knockout games. I think they need to, as I said earlier, diminish the reliance on the star as their main motivation. Win the games that are in front of you. If they had a final this week, they pick themselves up and at least finish the season on a high. Get some game rhythm. They rested all of their players for this tour to South Africa. They've only ever played in these knockout games over the last couple of weeks, and I do think game rhythm is important. Sure, you might lose some bodies, but Munster lost four players in the week before the Leinster game, and they still performed on the day because they had momentum and rhythm. Like, players do need to be rested from here and there, but Leinster players are as looked after all the way through the season for this point. I know they play more test rugby than other team. I think that was a mistake, and I think Cullen will be forensic at what he does. Lancaster reminds me a little bit of Schmidt, and like, if everything is controlled in every way on the pitch, when things start to go wrong and you lose your stabilisers, well, do you know how to cycle? Whereas Andy Farrell's taken them away, and Andy Farrell empowers them, and a lot of, even Lancaster himself has taken a lot of credit for what Ireland have achieved in the last couple of years. Well, I think Ireland would have won that game because Ireland are better, even though it's the same players wearing different jerseys. And obviously with a few like Ty Byrne, Peter O'Mahony, maybe a couple of bench options. Mac Hansen's just a free spirit. It doesn't get tangled up in the kind of stuff in his head. He just goes out and plays the game, which is really impressive. Not like, I do think that they struggled when O'Gara changed the script. They stopped kicking the ball to low from kickoff, so they couldn't exit the way they wanted to. They hounded Gibson Park at the base of the ruck. They challenged every kick. Leinster did nothing on their own terms in the second half. You got to figure that out. So it's on the line to some degree, and obviously there's the psychological preparation. They brought in Declan Darcy this year to try and fix some of the stuff that went wrong last year. There's the prescriptive nature of what Lancaster does, which I think they need to break from a little bit next season when Nina Ober comes in. Their defence isn't good enough. Yeah, their defence isn't aggressive enough. La Rochelle's defence was better on Saturday, and there were moments. Soutinho should have got there were. Bless Soutinho didn't score off that midfield break early in the second half. There was a desperate tackle between, I think it was either
Gibson Park
and Keenan,
yeah.
Wasn't it? They just basically got in front of him, but that shouldn't happen. The first try was too easy. I know there was a little bit of crossing in the build-up, but it was too easy.
Yeah.
So there are, and Shane would be better to speak of the technicalities of that, but a few people have said that to me since the game, and even beforehand, that their aggression waned as the season went on.
Yeah.
With Ireland, Simon Easterby is an excellent defence coach, and his boss is one of the best defence coaches we've ever seen in terms of Andy Farrell, and they put a real point on that. So there's one point in the game, and there's so much that they can get better on, that you think that they can do it next year, but that we've said that at the end of every season for the last five seasons, and they haven't been able to just get over the line, and they're back at the start again next season, and it's the psychological challenge is only get bigger. I mean, they must be broken this morning.
Yeah,
a lot to unpack there. I think is the phrase, isn't it? But I disagree with a number of those observations. I think, you know, the difference between Ireland and Leinster team to the biggest point for me was Sexton. And I think, you know, the anecdote about Rog behind the goals at the Grand Slam game, I think that's Sexton. Mm. And maybe Ross Byrne was doing it, I don't know. But
I also think Ty Byrne O'Mahony are significant. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. So that didn't happen. I think if Sexton plays, then they win that game. And I think the problem that is now, that's an issue for Ross Byrne. It's an issue for Farrell as well, as an issue for Ireland. So, you know, he's under the under the microscope of being able to deliver under the most sort of intense pressure. The Leinster defence, I think, is generally good. It's not as, you know, maybe recklessly aggressive as some, and I think that's maybe a conscious decision. They're very good at running in, you know, through the line and actually tackling behind it. And I thought at times in that first half, I did think, you know, that the aggression was really up, and that rooking aggression in particular was really strong. The tries, especially the sort of Dante try, did feel soft, but I'm also thinking this is almost something that you need to accept, or sort of you can't rely on making every single tackle against a team like La Rochelle or preventing every single offload, because the way he carried that ball in, it was it's a fraction of a body shape that wasn't quite right, and then he bounced off and he got through that gap. So, you know, I feel that the second try in the half as well, that wasn't ideal. But again, you have to sort of say that you're playing against great teams. You know, they're occasionally going to, you know, score tries. You're not going to hold them to nil. So that's less of an issue for me. But, you know, I think, you know, how they deal with anxiety and stress, you know, that is the big one. And they just compounded error after error. And sort of, you know, didn't play or didn't, you know, fire a shot in that second half. And you know, the back row, I think you play Doris and Colin in the back row. I get your point. We're not seeing the best of Doris, but would we definitely see more of him at number eight. It's a decision whether they go and see less of Jack Conan or you see less of Doris, depending on who plays what position. As simple as that, I feel, because they're different roles. So it is a big call not having Doris, who is like maybe Ireland's player of the year, in that position. But I wouldn't put Baird on the flanks. I would have had him. I would have had him in the second row. I have to say, I was surprised they didn't, and then I surprised they didn't bring him on either. That was, you know, quite shocking to me. And you know, within this, there was so many positives from a coaching perspective as well. This game was kind of bizarre because, you know, the way Leinster started, the way they broke them down, it was very canny, very, you know, smart, very observant of what La Rochelle had been doing and picking them apart. I can imagine if you were a coach and you scored tries in the way they did, you would be absolutely delighted. But then we did see, you know, so the second half, we made some of those strange decisions, I think, with regard to substitutions or non-substitutions. And then sort of the inability to be able to sort of bounce Leinster out of the this sort of lackluster, regressive way they were playing in the second half.
Shane, there was one man I think dominated this entire afternoon. Right from his pre-match interview when he's mimicking an American taxi driver. That's how relaxed he was, Ronan O'Gara. Halftime, tunnel dust-ups, post-match, talking about wanting to win six titles with this team, and then onto the press conference where there was all manner of perceived slights that had been carried out against his supposed little team. We're seen as a little team, and that's about to change. Ronan O'Gara dominated this, and he has wormed his way back into Leinster's heads big time, like he did as a player.
Oh, 100%. It is, and it's not, you know, it's La Rochelle, but it's Rog.
Yeah.
It's Rog. And you know what it is? It's probably confirming everything that Rog always believed or had to believe about Leinster for long periods of his career. That, you know, if you get into them, you can get up them. They're not as good as they think. Loads of, you know, teams, they're a bit fancy, but, you know, do they have the real grit? And, you know, that's heartbreaking from my perspective because, you know, we thought we turned a corner with that, but that's right back on the table again. And it's not just for La Rochelle. It's a sort of playbook and it's a mantra for everyone. And Ronan, throughout his career, and we don't always see what rugby players, like, slights can be a very motivating factor. And Ronan is brilliant at finding the slights. You know, I had the laugh after the game. It was the coin toss. It was the slight that, you know, they hadn't made eye contact. Oh, no, actually, it was. He had made eye contact. It was too much eye contact. So, you know, it was going to be one way or another. It was going to be a slight. I think Leinster actually had incredible respect for La Rochelle. I think that's, you know, I think that was very clear of the whole build-up. I think they spent a year licking their wounds about La Rochelle, wanted to be back in the final with them and wanted to prove them wrong or play their, you know, their biggest game against them. And that's what we saw in the opening 20 minutes. They just weren't able to deliver. So thinking that La Rochelle are a small team, I don't think that. I don't think anybody, I don't think Leinster thought that, but it's a useful construct. And, you know, the idea of them being the big team might necessarily be useful for motivation in the future for Ronan, because I think he likes that. And even when Munster were the biggest team in Europe, you know, they were being slighted and, you know, they weren't respected, and, you know, and that was what he needed. Now, what he has done is turn La Rochelle, a town of 70,000 people, towns that are similarly based around UK, Bognor Regis, Walton upon Thames, Tynemouth, Bamber Bridge, you know, all the big ones. Do you ever see them pulling out a European Cup? So it's incredible that he's done it. And this, what I did think about as well is he's talking about a dynasty, and he has created one already, and he maybe has another, there's another tale or there's another chapter to be written in the French top 14 by the end of the season. He's got there, and you know, if they win that, then undoubtedly they are already. But I was looking at Green Bay Packers. You know, that was a tiny town. It's a sort of almost anomaly with all the other franchises in the US. There's 100,000 people live there, and they're, you know, they are this you know, almost America's team. You know, everybody's heard of them, everybody knows about them. That's the level that Ronan is building La Rochelle too in the rugby equivalent. You know, my own hometown of Drogheda, there's, you know, 40,000 people there, not a great deal smaller than La Rochelle. And to think, you know, of them being sort of champions of Europe is kind of remarkable. So, you know,
I'll probably rule that one out, actually, yeah.
Hang on, we've got a bit of work to do there, but we'll see.
Trotter United nearly beat Dynamo Kiev once. Slither away.
But, so, you know, this is the sort of the size of what he's creating, and he's not, you know, he's creating maybe a dynasty, but like also a legacy that you know lives on forever and ever, and it is incredible. And when I was at my sort of, like, you know, lowest ebb there after the game, I had my head in my hands, and I was on the second tier, and I was just looking down. I was down to the main, looking down on the main group of La Rochelle fans, and I picked out this little kid that was bawling, crying. This is just before the end of the match, before the end of the match, just as it looked as if they were going to win. Bawling, crying in his mother's arms. I looked down again. I saw it was Jess O'Gara, and it was Ronan's son. And it was actually, you know, it made me feel better, because as sick as I was, it was actually something incredibly beautiful about this little boy, his father. You can imagine the stress that he had, you know, especially in the opening 20 minutes, and it turning around and it being so over overwhelmed with emotion and joy that he was crying in his mother's arms. And it was absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything to be taken from it, from my perspective, it's that, you know, a lovely family like the O'Garas have succeeded and will continue to succeed, because I tell you one thing, he's a remarkable, remarkable guy. Everything he did during the whole week was on his terms. It was the Ron O'Gara show. He interviews brilliantly. He makes everybody feel, relaxed. And but he's not like, he doesn't just give you mundane answers. He's he's pointed. He's direct. And this is just the start of his career. It's he's only been in the job 2 years. He's won two European Cups. He's in prime position to potentially win the top 14. Like, this guy, what he could achieve is unlimited.
Rory, can you just take us through a couple of these incidents? Because there was a lot of them, right? But maybe the main ones there that there's some confusion around is what happened in the tunnel, or what's being investigated. And also this coin toss. I hesitate to call it controversy because it's the most confected bollocks I've ever heard. But anyway, those two, maybe.
Well, there's even O'Gara talked. I've listened to so many different O'Gara interviews since the game that I'm kind of patching them all together with the whole picture of his day. I feel like I've done a true crime podcast. But he said he got abused by Leinster fans on the way in, and that gave the lads a spark. I mean, none of this channeled into the start of the game. Like, they went 17-0 down, and yet they're kind of like, this is all the stuff that motivated us. And maybe the Leinster fans, it worked, but
they did their job, the Leinster fans.
Yeah, he was kind of, I wouldn't have any time for some of their fans. They had a go at us on the way in. But basically, then before the game, there's this coin toss where Aldry turns up 2 minutes early, has to wait for Ryan, but Ryan comes on time, I'm told. I know two people who were there. They both said that it was completely blown out of proportion, that Ryan did nothing wrong. He shook hands, made eye contact. There was some confusion whether he stared him out or whether he didn't look at him at all. The quote is in French that that there was no eye contact made. He goes back to the dressing room, tells O'Gara about it. O'Gara tells the team, like, look, can you imagine these guys, what do they think of us? Even the video that surfaced during the week, this little clip of him talking to his team, and it's undated, I don't know when it was, but saying in this kind of hybrid English French, don't respect them, don't show them any respect. But it also sounds a little bit like they don't respect us. The Irish, I know what they're like, they don't respect us, don't respect them. So this feeds into what he was building all week, this narrative that he had before the game, where he said, we're not, people keep asking us, how do we stop Leinster? They have to stop us first. So then at half time, apparently in Marseille last year, O'Gara went into Wayne Barnes, and Leinster were furious about this. And some of the members of Leinster's backroom team saw him. They were really annoyed about it. In the Aviva Stadium, the referee's room is beside the Leinster dressing room. So this year, when they went down the tunnel, and Jacob Piper had fairly whistled La Rochelle off the park at the breakdown, which had been flagged by James Tracy in the build-up, and O'Gara got annoyed about that. So O'Gara goes down the tunnel, makes a beeline for the referee's room, which is beside the Leinster dressing room, and Sean O'Brien and I think Johnny Sexton were waiting for him.
It has to be Sexton and O'Gara.
It's something in the fact that the two most forceful personalities of the Leinster dressing room for the last 15 years were there to meet them, but neither of them were available to play. What if you put O'Brien and like the two of the big voices, because this Leinster team are quite quiet. Anyway, there was a bit of a row, a bit of pushing and shoving, and nothing, I think, too physical, but a lot of effing and blinding. And O'Gara eventually went back. I don't know if he ever got to talk to Piper or not. It doesn't sound like it. And Skelton was involved to some degree as well. And this kind of surfaced afterwards. EPCR were looking into it. Sexton also kind of went after Piper at the end. He kind of walked out onto the pitch, going, waving his finger and saying something to him. So there's a chance that he gets mentioned in a referee's report and maybe faces some sanctions. But EPCR's investigations into Ulster and La Rochelle getting cancelled didn't really lead to anything. They don't have that much teeth as an organisation. If it's in the ref's report, it might lead to something. But I think it's just the colour behind it all. But then O'Gara comes into the press conference, and on one stage he's talking about the emotion of it all, and his mum being ill and then having her there and the emotion of that. And the next question, he's starting to kind of talk about being, considered a small team. It's all there at the same time. He's able to deal with all of these things. Apparently he invited himself on RTE. He was like, I want to do the post-match. Really? So when the camera zooms in at the start of the broadcast, he's part of the panel.
This is at the very start of the match.
Of the
amazing to see him there first up. It's really striking.
And he was doing impressions, and then he goes, I'm off, runs off. And the last little bit of detail from the dressing room was the La Rochelle players were in there singing Leinster, Leinster, as they celebrated their win. What I really want is that these teams, Leinster are not seeded next year. I want these teams to be in the same pool, because the spite is off the charts.
Yeah. What, like, just being able to access a ref at all at halftime or full time is bananas.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that, O'Gara's, how many bans has he had this season for kind of like things he said to refs? But
I remember he believes he can influence them.
Definitely. I mean, everything he did in the week, like, he think even being on RT, I'm sure, is part of influence. He's not doing it for fun. You know, he's not doing it for his own profile. He's doing it to try and force his narrative on everything. And he worked with the Crusaders, and they do that, this theming thing where they theme everything and they come up with a storyline for their season and do a lot of visual imagery. So he's really into he's obviously a very technically gifted coach as well, and, you know, his playing experience feeds into that, but also he has put an awful lot of stock into messaging. And
it's all about Everest this week. Yes, we're going to climb Everest. Who would you bring up if you're climbing Everest?
Yeah, and he said that on RT, and then another interview said, if you want to climb Everest, you've got to climb over the bodies first. Yeah. Which was a really, you know, quite stark imagery, but, like, you know, he was like, I'm feeling really sorry for these Leinster coaches and players because I really admire what they do, but if you want to climb Everest, you got to climb over the bodies first. But, you know, he's thought deeply about all of this, and there's reasons behind it, and messaging about referees outside of the thing is part of it. But yeah, maybe there needs to be, and I don't know the law book inside out, but I presume there is supposed to be some kind of segregation of the officials at halftime. I mean, Jakob Piper's entitled to his rest and not to be influenced, and obviously Leinster weren't impressed by it.
I
kind of like it all, though. You know, yeah. I do. I know you shouldn't. And I know you're meant to say it's all disgrace and, you know, the referee. And you know, listen, referees need to be protected. They should be. And, of course, if you interfere with that, then maybe you face sanction. But I kind of like that it happens and let them face the sanction, you know. But it just adds to the spice. It adds to you know... It just shows the importance, you know, and I just that image that you painted there, Rory, of Jakob Piper going into the changing room beside Leinster, and you got Johnny Sexton and Sean O'Brien acting as bouncers as Rod and Skelton tried to come in. I wouldn't fancy getting it. I think there's one of those probably, or two of them out of place, but Skelton versus Sean O'Brien, I wouldn't fancy the look of that. But it does sort of add. It's a final. It's a Europe. It's Leinster have lost, you know, the previous week. They've lost the previous year. It's the same guys. La Rochelle have these, you know, have this clearly this chip on their shoulder. Leinster are, you know, weighed down by the weight of a fifth star, and that's why you get people acting, you know, out of the normal. And, you know, I don't mind that.
You can't go near refs. I'm sorry. I've watched a few underage football games this season, and just the effect at lower level. Like, it might be a bit of fun watching Raj and you imagine WWE style tunnel fracas or whatever, but I think it's a really bad look. And for Sexton to be seen on TV doing it as well, just leave him alone. Whatever. Like, these refs make so many mistakes, but they've such a hard job as well. And it's just, it doesn't help, I don't think. But I find it interesting that Raj believes he can control so many different elements. So when he's given an answer on TV or radio or whatever it is, Rory, he's both analysing quite well, giving you quite a good dissection of a game, also sending a message to his own players, probably sending a message to the opposition, being quite political, putting his name in for future Irish jobs. He's got like 10 wheels spinning in his head at the same time as giving quite a good answer. He's kind of a one-off.
His emotional intelligence is off the charts. His intelligence, he's obviously just able to, and I think you have to have an incredible brain to be a world-class out half, which he was. And I think Sexton's ability to see the picture, you know, you need to time slowing down, like Sexton and O'Gara, I think, were able to see the picture, and it's one of the things that we young out halves is such a difficult thing for them to grasp, because to be able to see everything going on at once like a quarterback is so difficult. And obviously that feeds in, like, Sexton's hyper intelligent as well. He's really able to fight his own corner. He's they're both winners as well. It's not just, you know, it's one thing being able to do it tactically, but also to have that incredible desire. Like, he's taken his family around the world for this, you know. I mean, I remember the scenes last year as well. You know, they've moved to New Zealand, they've been to Paris, now they're in Ile de Ré, and Ile de Ré is lovely, but it's not home. They've made a massive commitment for this. But he's an incredibly gifted human being with an impressive winning mentality that crosses the line sometimes, and he's obviously able to embrace these chips on the shoulder as well. Like, there was a book in everything he said across his interviews on Saturday before and after the game. He's fascinating. He's absolutely fascinating, and he is, in my mind, the outstanding candidate to be the Ireland coach. At the same time, Colm O'Regan, the comedian, put up an image today, and it was like O'Gara's first day at the Ireland session with loads of Leinster players in it. It's Brian Clough addressing the Leeds players in the damn United. And the
parallels are throw your medals in the bin, lads.
Yeah, I don't know.
Won any medals in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I'm the reason. Like, he's the bogeyman. And there's the Shells fans sing about Damien Duff, and the opposition fans, that they sing the zombie. He's in your head. He's in your head. Duffer. I, like, O'Gara's in Leinster's heads. He's firmly implanted himself there. They would have beaten anyone else on Saturday.
Yeah, he is. He definitely is. I agree with you. The problem, though, that Ireland face is that the only job that Ronan, I think, would leave La Rochelle for, you know, in Ireland is the Irish job. It's the only one that would do it. So it's only really international rugby that would move him anywhere, I believe. So that means he's got the Irish job, which isn't, you know, on the cards anytime soon, I don't think. There's only other one job, in, probably in world rugby, that, or maybe two jobs that might persuade him to leave club rugby, and that's England and maybe Australia. And I think that would be a serious decision for him to make. And I think we'd be in jeopardy of, you know, of losing him to one of those two jobs. Depends how England go with this World Cup. You know, they have a new coach there, but he hasn't had a, you know, sort of inauspicious start. If they have a bad World Cup, they may be looking elsewhere. You know, depends what goes on. Australia have been sort of weird, but, you know, that might even be a job, mightn't even be an international job that would interest them. So you're really down to potentially two jobs, and one of them in Ireland doesn't look as if it'll come up for a while. And we may be in a situation where we're talking about how Ronan O'Gara's England are in the head of our Irish players.
Ah, Shane, piss off.
I don't fancy that, honestly. I'm telling you.
It's been a rough weekend, Shane.
That's where, you know, there's not too many jobs that would, I think, interest Ronan or could interest him. Like, in where would you go? In, you know, what other team would he, where would he go and leave La Rochelle for? Not a club team, not to my mind. And then there's a very, very few international teams that would interest him. But I bet you England would be one of them.
I kind of feel, he mentions it so often, he wants to, like, for all the talk of, like, money or power or whatever might come with other jobs, I sort of feel his heart will still be with Ireland, and that'll
it's
make
timing him, though. That'll make him turn England down. Oh, I don't think so. I think he would do.
I think he could do both.
I think I find it very difficult.
Not at the same time.
Rodgers, you know, he's impressive. He's not that good. But we have an English coach. I still think it's such a leap for an Irishman to go and coach England. I find that so hard to tally. I know he could do it and he's qualified to do it and everything. Like, Borthwick's there until the next World Cup. I'm not that impressed by Borthwick, but he is English. They want to have an English coach. He wants the Ireland job. He really, really wants the Ireland job. Like, you know, Shane played with him how many times for Ireland? How much does playing, being Ireland's 10, was that Ronan O'Gara's identity? How cutting was it when he was left on the bench for Paddy Jackson that time? You know, that this was everything to him for so long, and now he's gone off. All of this, I think, is part of a plan. Now, part of the plan is being successful, because that's what he wants to be along the way. And look, he's breaking eggs, and that some of the things, that the damage that's being done, may be irreplaceable. And the RFU will be looking at it from the outside, and they might go, no, we don't want any part of going into referees' rooms or getting bans or, you know, all of this stuff. But at the same time, you're looking at probably the best young coach in the world. You know, who's outside, you know, Rangers Robinson's been picked up by the All Blacks outside of club rugby, so he's got to be top of that shortlist. And I think if the time, no matter where he is, if that call came, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a clause somewhere anyway that he can go take the Ireland job, because he wants
I think
that.
The IRFU and Rog make the timing work. Yeah. You start chatting now.
Well, he's breaking.
Well, listen, I know we shouldn't even be talking about this, because it's not about this. But, no. You know, it is. My only issue is the timing issue, you know, and because, you know, Farrell has done so well, and we're going into a World Cup, and actually the backroom team as well, who'll have their own ambitions as well and conversations. But I do, without a shadow of a doubt, I think, you know, Ronan is the, you know, most impressive. Now the most impressive club coach in the world, and I would think he would be the most sought after coach in the world. As I said, Robinson now has the All Blacks squad. He would be number one. If you're looking at anyone to move, who is it? Any team in the world would want him. And I'm sure under any other circumstances than one that exists right now, Ireland would want him as well. But that means others will.
Just, I know we want to wrap, but just very quickly, one thing, we've gone deep on it, and one thing we didn't mention, I don't think, was losing James Ryan after 30 minutes. And, you know, Leinster, we'll spend months looking at the kind of going deep themselves, but if they hadn't lost their captain after half an hour, some of the stuff we talked about.
Yeah, the leadership in the second half,
you
to do need Ryan,
luck.
All that sort
you
of
know,
stuff.
There is luck involved as well in the 1-point game, and that was a big miss that
Jimmy O'Brien, trying to catch the ball sort of challenging who was at Rule in the air in the second half when they finally get out of the first half. There was moments of luck, but ultimately La Rochelle a good bit better.
Yeah. But it just, for a complete analysis, I thought that was one we just need to...
Fair enough. And just the final thing, we also did get a bit, Leinster did get a bit of luck in that in the first half yellow card as well, which I didn't think was a yellow card. I thought it was a bit, I thought it was a bit harsh. And the fact that La Rochelle scored themselves on that yellow was kind of, you know, was impressive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're breaking eggs. Ronan is breaking mostly Leinster eggs at the moment, I think it's fair to say. Rory Shane, Rory, thanks a million. Great stuff.
Thanks a million, lads. Great speak guys. To you again in 12 months.
You know, never been done before to win here, to get a series win. You know, it probably wasn't something you thought about as a young fella, but now there'll be young fellas at home in Ireland will be, you know, dreaming of playing for Ireland, you know, winning over here. You know what I mean? It'll have been done before. It won't be the task that it was. And, you know, it'll never be taken away from that group that they're the first ones to do it. Not only win once, but win a series here.
As promised, Murph, here's your hurling email to wrap the show. The greatest sport that was ever played by any man, says Jeff Fitzpatrick.
Excellent, yeah, excellent.
Hi, lads. After Murph's story a few weeks ago about his pal not going to a Galway football game to go watch Limerick instead, and Mal and Jamie agreeing was a bucket list sporting occasion like going to see Pep's Barca, I reached out to my brother-in-law and arranged to go to Tip versus Limerick. It was an amazing day, and as a Dublin fan who has sat through countless dud Leinster Football Championship games, I would suggest that the bucket list event is not seeing Limerick, but instead going to see a Munster Hurling Championship game, as in any Munster Hurling Championship game. As I sit here on the train back to Houston, I'm still in awe of the raucous atmosphere and frenetic competition. Fantastic day out, says Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, the two games yesterday were utterly brilliant. Yeah. They really were just sensationally brilliant entertainment. And again, like full stadiums, you know, and it just adds so much to these GA games, you know. The and the, like the Jeopardy now is absolutely gigantic. Clare in the Munster final. Tip still have to beat Waterford next week, which you'd have to presume they will do. And so it all comes down to Cork and Limerick. And I mean, I still think Limerick will
Just about get through.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
they're
like,
on the, they're
a draw
on the
will
edge.
Do Cork. So they start a point up. yeah, a draw will do Cork because of their better scoring average. But it's just so unbelievably delicately poised. And you know, you're kind of watching, you know, Limerick take Garrod Hegarty and Keane Lynch off inside, you know, before 50 minutes have even elapsed, and they still managed to dig out a draw. Yeah. You know, it is kind of the, in a weird way, kind of talking, you know, infallibility, you know, and even to bring it back to Leinster for a second, you know, Leinster's infallibility in all but the biggest games, you know, it's a real stick to beat them with, you know, and like brilliance and perfection in sport and all the rest, it's not that popular a thing, you know. It's, you know, it's it, people aren't that amazed for too long by absolute sporting perfection. So now we're seeing Limerick full of imperfections, and actually maybe in a weird way people's admiration for what they're doing is actually going up. I still think they'll probably have enough for Cork, but we have Jamie in studio on Wednesday to discuss all this.
Jamie and Maggie Clerkin on the show during the week. The future for Katie Taylor will be, well, is up in the air and will be up for discussion. We're going to talk Munster against the Stormers in the DHL Derby in the URC final. That's it.
Which team's going to deliver on? That's the big question.
That's the question. Football to come later today as well. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Just thanks, all of you. You're all great.
Thanks, Emil. Sign up now on secondcaptains.com. No ads, remember, for any episodes if you sign up to the World Service. Second Captains Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What storm is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys. It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.